I'll be talking about Power Pitter post-exploitation like a boss. So how many of you are penetration testers? You surely do post-exploitation? Yes or no? Yeah. So we'll have a look at something which could be used to enhance your post-exploitation experience. Sounds like a vendor term, but yes. And let's have fun. So something about me.
Hello?
Yeah. I'm a hacker who go by the handle Samrat Ashok. This is my Twitter handle. And you can find my blog posts on my blog. I'm creator of Cautilia and Nishang. Cautilia is a toolkit which could be used to use human interface devices like TeenC and others in a penetration test or for fun or whatever way you want to be. Nishang is a post-exploitation framework in PowerShell. PowerPitter is going to be a part of this framework. You can find both of these on Google Code. Links are on my blog. I'm interested in offensive information security, methodology to pawn systems, getting into systems. I'm a freelance penetration tester. Just read it twice. And I've spoken at a couple of conferences before this. And this is my first time at DEF CON. Thank you. So what we'd be looking at is what is the need for post-exploitation, what is PowerShell in a couple of slides, why do we need PowerShell, then we'll have a look at PowerPitter, its architecture, usage, payloads, and much more details. Then there's a web shell which is written in, which I call C#.NET and PowerShell. And the limitations and conclusions. So what is post-exploitation? For me, it is the most important part of a penetration test. As a freelance penetration tester, I know that someone who's going to pay me doesn't understand what a shell is, but I got access to your DC. Yeah, that's okay. Even I have access to my DC. So that's kind of response you get in a meeting with the client. With those guys who ought to pay you. So we need some ways to show actual data or things like if it's a pharma company, the complaints their customers have made against them, or if it's a supply chain management company, then the profit they take at every step of the supply chain, things like that. So this differentiates a good penetration tester with something which I've written, etc. So what is PowerShell? It's a shell and a scripting language which is present, I think, post Vista. It is present by default on all Windows systems. It is an automation framework designed to help system admins and, of course, penetration testers who know how to use it to their profit. It's based on .NET framework and is tightly integrated with Windows. Yes, it's by default on Windows. So, why PowerShell? Anybody here uses PowerShell for their penetration testing things? Wow, nice. Any one of you use Nishang by any chance? Wow. Woo! just out of curiosity, anybody here uses Cautilia or knows what is it already? Okay, thank you. So, yes, why PowerShell? It's easy to learn and powerful. The help system is quite good. You can read help about every commandlet or commands or whatever it is in it. We're not going into details of that. And one thing which I have come through during my penetration tests is that it is trusted by system administrators, countermeasures, etc. No one actually cares about PowerShell. There are a lot more things to have a look at. You can consider it bash of Windows. Many things like commands like ls, cat, etc., the very common ones, are used as aliases in PowerShell, so you would be comfortable using it. And this means less dependence on any library which converts your code to executable, let's say Python to exe or things like that. And somewhat, to some level, less dependence on MSF too. You know, MSF is very good. I mean, PowerBit is nowhere near Metropiter from where it borrows its name. But AV vendors are all around MSF. So it's good if sometimes you have something in your tool chest other than MSF which can help you in achieving things in a similar way. PowerBuilder. Yeah, it's a post-exploitation tool written in PowerShell. It's a module. How many PowerShell programmers or guys you use PowerShell other than penetration testing for anything? Same guys. Okay. Yeah. Okay, it's a module or a script. It depends on the usage. So how PowerBuilder is designed is if you rename a file to ps1, which is the default extension for PowerShell scripts, it could be used as a PowerShell script. And if you rename it as psm1, then it's a PowerShell module. Payloads and features are all divided into different functions. Each function represents a different functionality. So if you have some code which you want to include with PowerBuilder so that its helper functionalities could be used, for example, persistence, pivoting, etc., then you can just write a new function, copy it into your PowerShell module, and you're good to go. So how to use PowerShell? So since we are talking about post-exploitation, we'll assume that we have access to a machine. Rather, we have administrative access to a machine and would try to make our way to other machines on the network, backdoor that machine, or pull data out of that machine more effectively. That could be done using non-PowerShell methods, or at least in a most healthy way. And yes, the third thing, it could also be used with a Metropiter shell. You can use, one thing, if you're using it from Metropiter shell, you won't be able to get an interactive PowerShell prompt from Metropiter. It's the way PowerShell handles output redirection. And other than from Metropiter, if you have any custom shellcode which gives you ability to execute code on a machine, you can always use PowerShell and hence PowerBuilder. So there are many payloads in PowerBuilder. We'd have a look at it. That would be the most lengthy part of this talk. Most of the time will be in the demonstrations. So these are the capabilities of PowerBuilder. Persistence, using WMIE permanent event consumers, will reside into the machine. It won't be startup script or something like that, service failure or scheduled task. It won't be anything of these. It would be we'll use WMIE permanent event consumers. That's it. That's it. I can explain it right now. We'll have a look at it. Pivoting. We'll use built-in PowerShell remoting to pivot to other machines. There are two ways possible. Either we'll just run commands non-interactively, or we'll interactively run commands or scripts or whatever on a remote machine. We have a simple function called enable duplicate token, written by a friend Nicholas, which allows, which is nothing great, but if you are admin on machine, you can get system level access and do stuff like dumping hashes or LSS secrets, etc. Then there are helper functionalities, simple ones like converting executables to Unicode encoded texts or Base64 encoding for acceleration, etc. So these are some helper functionalities. Deployment. We can deploy PowerShell from a PowerShell session, from PowerShell remoting session. We can use Metropater. What else we can use? We can use PSExec, obviously, because that allows us to execute commands on a remote machine.
And, of course, we need a volunteer from the audience. First-time DEF CON person, your hand shot up. Yeah. Everybody else is like, damn it. To our new speaker and our new attendee.
Busy afternoon, we gotta go. And no following us, we know you're out there.
Okay, so PowerBitter could be deployed using drive-by downloads. We'll use a HTML application which will execute a VB code, which in turn would download PowerBitter from a server and execute it. And we can also use human interface device, because I love to insert HID thing into everything. So select some couple of functionalities and run it from your HID device. From your HID, sorry. So let's get down with demos. So let's assume... Do you want me to assume that I have clear text passwords of the remote machine, or... do I have the hashes of the remote machine? Okay, so this is an attacker machine, and we'll use WCE to pass the hashes. Sorry, let me boot the target first. What, the font size?
Yes. Yeah.
Better? Okay, meanwhile, it is booting. So what we'll do, we'll use these hashes with WCE. And on our victim, we will have administrative access. So, yeah, because it's a post-exploitation thing, please don't shoot me. So we'll have a remote session, which is PowerShell remoting, a built-in feature of PowerShell, which is enabled by default post-server 2012. So we'll have a remoting session on the victim machine. There, we'll download the PowerBitter module, import it, and we'll have fun. Okay, so we have hashes with us. Ouch. So let's this enter ps session commandlet opens a ps session with this remote computer name, which is called Akela, which means standalone. It's not part of any domain. Let me try with credentials then. Maybe I have older hashes with me. I think that was an issue with the, because my attacker machine had PowerShell version 3 and the victim is PowerShell version 2. So maybe because of that, otherwise I just tested it before the talk. Okay, so the roles are reversed. So my VM machine is now attacker. Yes. Okay. So let's Now if I import the module because... Okay, so the module is already there. Either we can download it using this one-liner, which is this. But I'm not going to do that because I've already wasted a couple of minutes. So I've renamed it to update.psm1 just because I was testing some things. So let's import this. So now we have some functions imported into this current PowerShell session. For example, let's see, won't be beautiful, but let's see what is some juicy or basic information about the client. Okay. Isn't looking beautiful, but as you can see, we have logged in profiles of logged in users, PowerShell environment, PuTTY trusted hosts, PuTTY saved sessions, recently used commands. Are there any shares on the machine? No. Environment variables, some details about the current user, no SNMP, installed applications for current user, domain name, no, it's a standalone system, contents of etc host, running services, local users, local groups, WLAN info. This is the thing which messes it all, okay, etc. So this gives us a basic idea about the target system. Now let's have a look at the basic things like get WLAN keys. So one thing I would like you to note is, for example, when I say get WLAN, this is an independent script. This is not because of PowerPrint. It's residing in that system. Better I get out of this folder. Okay. So this get WLAN keys function shows us the keys in plain text of all the Wi-Fi WLAN system, WLAN profiles residing on that system or which it has connected to in past. No, that's my home Wi-Fi. Okay, just to make things faster, I made a list of what I want to demonstrate. Okay, WLAN keys and clear done. Keylogger I'm not showing, it takes time. Okay. We already had hashes, we assumed that we had hashes. But suppose you got access to this system from a remote shell, you don't have access to the password hashes. Then let's use this. Will you get hashes? No, we won't, because we need system privileges to execute this thing. So for that, we have a helper function called enable duplicate token. This duplicates system token from LSS service and assigns it to the current PowerShell thread. So we run both of these in tandem. And here we do have the hashes of the system. Okay, but these are hashes. What if we want LSS secrets from the machine? Let's try it out. Okay, but this is a 64-bit system, a new victim. So for that, I need to execute. Okay. Is it the correct path? Wow, 64 bits.
It's just
flat. Okay. Thank you. Okay, this is the 32-bit partial because LSS secrets are stored in the 32-bit registry. And here we have to... We'll import PowerPrinter in this 32-bit PowerShell, call enable duplicate, and call get LSA. So that that works. Let's see. Thank you. Okay, so we will import it. Okay, so we have the LSS secrets of this machine. As you can see, this is, again, my password. Okay. Okay, now. Let me try again to get back to the older victim, because for a couple of these things, I have a MS SQL server running on the older victim. Or rather, let's use it on the same machine. So now we are, just for the sake of demonstration, we are running it on the same machine. But I swear it works on the remote machines too. Okay, let's try this. Invoke Medusa. It's basic brute forcer. Let's do it on ourselves. Okay, it's bound to be successful because we are running in the same machine. We'll leave it for now. Let's execute some MS SQL commands on this machine with username this and password this. Okay, so it asks whether you want to run a PowerShell shell or a skill shell or a command shell. Let's select PowerShell. So now we have a PowerShell shell on this machine. So let's check what's the version. It's version 2, and we can do much stuff. So there are already many built-in commandlets in PowerShell which could be very useful in a penetration test. For example, get process, etc. Okay, we do have a basic port scanner too, but let's leave it. Okay. We do have execute shellcode, but let's leave it too, because I want to show you one more thing, which was not present in the slides on the DVD. That's why. Let's have a look at pivoting. Where will we pivot to? Okay, meanwhile it's getting up. Let's have a look at a video. Okay, I'm on a remote machine. Zoom out. As you can see, I'm on a remote machine. Okay. I think I'll open it in VLC. It's not playing it. Okay, I'll try to. Okay, so we are on a remote machine. And just import the module. And there's a backdoor called wait for command, which pulls a URL for commands. And only when. Those who can't see, I'm sorry. So we have this check URL as this paste bin, and as the payload URL, we'll use this paste bin URL. You can use any service, any website, any web app you want. Okay, we have the check URL, the payload URL, the magic string. The payload will check if the magic string provided to the payload matches this one. Only then the payload will execute. We say start 123, and the stop string is stop. Whenever stop comes in place of the start 123, the backdoor will stop. Okay, we just downloaded PowerPrater and got hashes of this system. As you can see, the payload was this. The payload was this. And now we change the payload to maybe get process. And meanwhile, in the background, the backdoor, it's waiting for either the stop string or next command. Till the time stop is not found on the check URL, it will keep looking for new commands or new payloads on the payload URL part. And the time it takes 1 minute, that is 60, it takes 60 seconds to execute commands in between, so that it doesn't create too much noise or too much traffic to get caught easily. So after waiting for 1 minute, okay, so I'm running out of time, so yeah, it will show the process and then I'll change it to stop and it will stop. let's leave the pivot thing for the while. I'll blog about it. Okay, let's see the what's the IP of this victim. Okay, assume you have a file upload or somehow you can upload files to a ASP.NET machine or server. So you can use this. This may come handy. So what is it, 146? Okay, first the slides, because I've made the slides, so I have to go through them. Okay, it's named after the god of death, Yamraj. How many of you know Yamraj here? Yeah? I see a couple of Indian faces, so you guys might know it. Yeah. So it's god of death, sounds badass. So it's written in C#.NET, as I said, that is what I call it. The UI is designed to be to look like a actual PowerShell shell or PowerShell prompt. You have the ability to download and upload files. You can execute scripts using the encode and execute button. And if the remoting is enabled, you can also run commands on remote machines using this web shell. So before the demo, meet Yamraj. Whoa, what's this? Wife of Yamraj. Okay, so is it visible? Better now? Let's have a quick look at it. If you type help, it will show you how you can execute commands, etc., on this on the victim using this. The best thing in this is encode and execute this option. You can actually copy a fairly large PowerShell script in this command console. And when you click it, it uses compressed PostScript by Carlos Perez, thanks to him. So, it compresses the script and uses PowerShell encoded command to execute it on the victim. We won't have a look at it. It'll take time. Let's see that whether we are really able to do something. Yes, some basic commands. Yes, users. What else? Any command you want me to run here? Let's say stop computer, etc. Anything. And one thing is, if you want to download or upload any file, the help clearly says you have to physically type here. For example, if you want to upload a file to the current directory, you have to put the full name here. Let's say one dot. No, that's it. Browse for it. Sorry, browse for it, select it and upload it. That's a little bit inconvenient, but it's for the purpose of maintaining the feel of a proper PowerShell prompt. Okay, limitations. Yet to undergo community testing. I've been using this for past 6 months. Many of the payloads are already part of Nishan. So some of them have undergone some testing, others have not. So bugs will keep coming. I think a tool improves the time. And one aspect is Keylogger does not work from the PowerShell remoting session. I don't know why. It's maybe because of the run space restrictions with the PowerShell remoting session. I'm unaware of any Keylogger in PowerShell which runs from a PowerShell remoting session. And yes, backdoors can be detected with careful traffic analysis because it's a fixed time interval in which it polls the source. Pivot depends upon partial remoting. Okay, to conclude with, PowerShell gives you much control over a Windows machine or a Windows network. And PowerPrinter utilizes this thing in an attempt to ease this most important phase of a penetration test. Obviously, there are other ways to do the same thing. PowerShell just makes it or tries to make it easier. I would like to thank, give shout, and give credit to all these guys who are friends and fellow PowerShell hackers. So I would request applause for these guys. And I would like to thank my friend Arthur, who helped me getting here. And there's another interesting PowerShell talk tomorrow by Joe. Please make sure you attend it. Thank you. Any questions, insults, feedbacks? You're welcome. Thank you.